for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, returning with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A solo effort again this week, but plenty to get through as the season really is coming to a close. We got reaction from non-league finals day at Wembley last Saturday, with two cracking finals in front of the fans. David Richardson of the non-league paper is back helping us round up the week's news, including the vote in the much anticipated National League EGM, Sutton's title win on Sunday, and previewing the weekend's final league games, with still so much to play for with those many clubs involved in those National League playoffs. Plus, we catch up with one of the managers involved in this weekend's National League playoff chase. It's Pete Wild, who has done another superb job leading his FC Halifax Town to within a whisker of another playoff stab. Hopefully plenty to enjoy, so let's get matters underway. So if last week's show previewing the teams in the FA Vase and FA Trophy was my favourite one of the year, Saturday at Wembley was something of a bittersweet day. As you always know, there'll always be two happy interviews to conduct and two much tougher ones with managers of the losing teams whose dreams have just been shattered. One highlight that couldn't be underestimated was the noise made by the limited number of fans allowed in. 1,500 per Vase club and 3,000 per trophy club. And the extra magic it added to the event couldn't be missed. In an FA Vase final worthy of any featured game at Wembley, it was Warrington Rylands who just seemed that little bit sharper on the day in a close and very entertaining battle. In the end, Elliot Nevitt netting the first hat-trick at Wembley since Harry Kane did so for England against Montenegro in 2019, made all the difference as Warrington Rylands beat Binfield 3-2. As they had throughout the competition, the Binfield joint managers, Carl Withers and Jamie McClurg, still remained upbeat post-match, despite being clearly gutted by the defeat. So it started with a little curveball for player manager McClurg and asked him if the famous Wembley pitch had been as hard on his legs as legend suggests.
I've just said, actually, that I thought it was a little bit easier on that, but it might be because I'm a little bit older, so it's a bit easier on the bones. No, I mean, look, the surface is unbelievable. It's a lot harder than what you think. It looks, like, obviously, a bit soft and stuff like that, but it's very firm underfoot. I think the thing that drains you is probably your adrenaline. I mean, you're turning up to one of the best stadiums in the world and you're walking out on a pitch, and I think that drains you emotionally and stuff like that. That was one key thing which me and Cole tried to do. I don't think our fitness levels looked anything bad. Obviously, Elliot Legg's come off with a hamstring injury, but that's nothing to do with the pitch or adrenaline. And no, playing 90 minutes and giving everything is always tiring. But yeah, I actually probably preferred it on there. I might not when I watch it back tomorrow.
Although it wasn't a B, there was much to be positive about, and the Vase run had certainly put Binfield on the map, ready for the new season, in their new division, in the new league, in the Isthmian South Central, following elevation in the restructure. I put it to Carl Withers that Chairman Bob Bacon was probably already planning how we would be getting all those fans in at Hill Farm Lane.
Absolutely. You know, hopefully, I think what this Vase run has done for the village and the community is, It's you know, it's brought us more together. You know, the phone calls, the messages and the support, you've seen it today, you know, family and friends. It's really brought this village together. And, you know, I hope and I'm sure he feels the same that, you know, that first game that we play at home, which, you know, we're longing for, we'll see much, much more support. And we hope that support continues with us on this journey, because, you know, it has been a tough 2 years for us, you know, with the pandemic and so forth. And, you know, we look forward to next year, and it's going to be a new challenge for us, one that we're looking forward to, one that I feel we deserve. And hopefully, you know, that the village are going to get behind us, you know, for years to come.
There were some nice touches post-match when winning manager Dave McNabb made sure he took time to speak to the Binfield staff, and they were appreciative of that and made the comment of the same, making us non-leaguers only prouder of what we had witnessed there. Dave McNabb himself couldn't be prouder of his own team. Post-match, I started with a question about whether his side, being first out for the pre-match warm-up and then quick in their plays from the opening whistle, was a planned tactic or just nervous energy.
In terms of getting out early, I think we were meant to be out sort of 30 minutes, but the stadium had asked maybe you can go a few minutes early. It gives a little bit more of a turnaround once you come in. So we went out there when we were advised to do so. The lads were eager to get out. I think sometimes you can overcomplicate things by trying to give them too much information and too many messages. We did all that last night at the hotel, and the lads were just desperate to get out and get on that pitch.
And I also asked what not only playing at Wembley was like, but playing in front of a crowd for the first time in months, and then a crowd consisting of many friends and family.
And I think that's the bit that makes it the hardest to try and put into words. I think, obviously, the support that all those players get from the friends and family and from the club and all the fans is second to none. The support I get personally from your daughter Rebecca and from your daughter Daisy, the sacrifices they make to allow me to go and watch games on Tuesday nights or to on the phone all the time to players, I can't thank them enough.
When so often the FA Trophy is a bit more of a cautious chess game following the usually more open FA Vase finals, this one we expected would be livelier given the way both managers like to play, and it was certainly an FA Trophy final to remember. It was a competitive game from the off, with the Step 2 side Hereford having the best of the opening half, scoring on 13 minutes and going in 1-0 up at half-time. But just as the Stevenage side led by Mark Stimpson had come back from behind all those years ago to win the last time he picked up the trophy with Stevenage, the Hornchurch manager, as he now was, saw his side draw level through sub Charlie Ruff before two late goals sealed the tie for the Step 3 side. Hereford boss Josh Gowling was philosophical in defeat, even when I asked if his suggestion that Hereford were the underdogs going into the game was possibly upset by his side taking an early lead.
No, I think we controlled the first half. I just think we lost the game second half where we just didn't retain the football. And they put pressure on us. When we won the ball back, we turned it over too easy. And I just think that ultimately cost us the game.
I'd seen the Bulls boss somewhat nervously pacing the technical area as the second half wore on, and I asked him if it was much more difficult as a manager in those sort of big games than a player involved in the action.
Yeah, of course. I feel for the lads. They're like sons to me. So you just see when we dropped off a little bit, you just want to try and, push them forward and do your best you can. Obviously, we made a couple of changes just to kind of up the tempo a little bit, but we just didn't keep the ball well enough second half, and that was the undoing of us, to be honest.
And despite the hearty celebrations from the Hornchurch fans and the team, all the Hereford staff and players stayed out on the field for the presentation and watched respectfully their victors lift the trophy.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be graceful in victory and graceful in defeat. And, my lads are respectful. That's what they are, a respectful football club. Sometimes you've got to feel that hurt. I feel it now. I'm hurting now. But I know about myself is I'll come back stronger because of this. And I know my players will come back a lot stronger. And sometimes you have to go through this to really prepare yourself forward. And I know we'll do that next season.
Not surprisingly, getting winning manager Mark Stimpson away from the celebrations to the press conference took some time, but when he got there, I reminded him that last week I suggested he needed a replica of the trophy for his mantelpiece with four wins already under his belt at that stage. Now I wondered if a change of name by Depot was more appropriate for Mark, the man of the trophy, Stimpson, with his fifth win of the FA Trophy.
Yes, and I think my answer was, yeah, if anyone wants to give me one, I'll definitely put it on my mantelpiece. I can't explain it. I just tell the boys the truth. You've got an opportunity at the end of the season to play in a fantastic stadium. Don't give the opportunity up lightly. Some games, for instance, FA Cup this year, we played Hampton and Richmond away. We were the better side. We got knocked out on penalties. That's how this game works. But if you're prepared to work harder than your opponents, in the end, you will get your rewards. And that's what all those players have got today.
A record set by another FA Trophy win and possibly one set, with Stimpson's son, Charlie, coming on as a sub in the game too to enjoy the win with his dad.
Listen, I'm an honest person. Charlie, when he comes into the football club, is a football player. He always has been, he always will be. If he's required to go on the pitch to do a job, he will do it. If he's not, he won't. His sister's was here today. His partner was here today. My grandson, unfortunately, he's only 4 months old, little Archie. He couldn't get here today. I bet they're really, really proud of him.
All in all, a very enjoyable day out for all those that are able to make it or watch it on TV, and a great spectacle to promote the non-league game. Hopes and dreams met and shattered, but I'm sure many of those names featured in those two games are those people that we'll be hearing much more about in the years to come. So a slightly different order this week, with a penultimate week of the season upon us. So let's head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and hopefully on the other end of the line, senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. Now, we were both lucky enough to be at Non-League Finals Day last weekend. And as ever, a great showcase for the non-league game, probably more than ever because of the season we've had and the fact that there were a limited number of fans allowed in the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. A really, really good day at Non-League Finals Day last weekend. You know, much the sort of the same as the Finals Day we had just a few weeks before. But obviously, like you say, with the fans in the ground this time. But again, another two really entertaining and interesting games. Obviously, Warrington Rylands beating Binfield 3-2 in a sort of what's become a pretty sort of staple for the FA Vars final, and it being a sort of a classic each year, really. You know, a really entertaining game there. Obviously, Elliot Nevitt scoring a hat-trick at Wembley in the FA Vars final as well, which was, you know, sort of special to see, and obviously special for him too. And then, of course, Hornchurch's turnaround against Hereford, and sort of a really sort of memorable last 15 minutes in that game when they came back to win 3-1. So a sort of good day all round. Like you say, fans, limited number of fans back in. Obviously, you know, I'm sure, you know, we'd have liked to have had a few more, but you know, it certainly was a real sort of eye opener, really, as to sort of how much fans contribute to fixtures and matches. You know, there's the sort of scenes when Hornchurch went ahead against Hereford, and sort of seeing all the fans celebrating there. But yeah, it really was sort of a sight to see, really, and sort of almost a little bit sort of emotional, really, sort of hearing fans singing songs and enjoying themselves in the football grounds again.
Yeah, and I was chatting to someone that was in the Hornchurch end, one of the handful that were there on Saturday, and I was suggesting that maybe it's going to be like when England won the World Cup at Wembley. There's going to be more people that say that they were there than actually were.
Yeah, quite possibly. But no, they certainly enjoyed their day, that's for sure. Obviously, some of them managed to get onto the pitch at the end, which maybe sort of dampened things a little bit, and you know, I'm sure Wembley sort of security will be looking into quite sort of how that happened, because it's certainly unusual to see. But it was certainly a day the Hornchurch fans and indeed the club and players and Mark Stimpson certainly won't forget in a hurry, that's for sure.
And somewhat of a weekend you won't forget as well, because on Sunday we had Sutton United achieving what many said was the impossible and taking the National League title and promotion to the Football League. And again, you were the man on the spot. Some pretty emotional scenes there as well, especially for the fans being there as the biggest moment in their history.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another historic day for another non-league club. As you say, a non-league club that's been non-league for 123 years and has ended that now with a sort of title victory in the National League, which I don't think anybody saw coming or backed at all. And, you know, and even as the season went on, you know, you thought maybe Sutton will fall away and perhaps the experience of Gary Johnson at Torquay will get them over the line, or Stockport will come on strongly with the players they have. But they just kept on digging out results, and you know, it was sort of a perfect ending really for them last weekend. As you say, fans back in the ground, but it was on BT Sport as well. And they played so well considering the occasion too. You know, it couldn't really have gone any better, winning 3-0 against a Hartlepool side, which is worth remembering that they're absolutely no mugs at all and still fighting for third, to get that third place and get through to the semi-finals. So, yeah, it really was a sort of memorable day for the club. You know, lots of good people involved at Sutton. You know, and a club that's really sort of embraced the National League. Obviously, Paul Doswell played a massive part in their rise in his 11 years as manager, taking them from step three into the National League and the playoffs. And of course, had the FA Cup run against Arsenal and everything that went with that. So, yeah, they've really sort of been embracing this top level. You know, not a fully full-time club either. They sort of call themselves three-quarter time. That'll be changing when they go up. But yeah, a really sort of good story for them, good story for non-league really. And you know, I don't think we'll probably see anything quite like that for a long time.
Yeah, and nice to have those great stories in the season that we've had. And one of those sort of souring notes has been the issues that at the National League. This week we've had the much talked about the EGM, Extraordinary General Meeting of the National League, and the rules of the competition, again, frustrating many. The vote of no non-confidence in the board and chairman wasn't passed due to a pretty solid no from the Step 1 clubs, but a different view from the Step 2 clubs.
Yeah, that's right. The majority of clubs at Step 2 were in favour of the resolution, whereas those in Step 1 weren't. Presumably that's because Step 1 managed to finish their season and carry on, but it's sort of worth remembering too, you know, I think clubs have different issues with the National League, whether that be over the funding that didn't come through in the way clubs may have expected from October through to December, and then the case of the season ending early, then perhaps the way the vote is constructed, in the sense that both North and South have a combined 8 votes, whereas National League clubs have 1 each. So there's sort of a range of different views clubs have in terms of that EGM. The National League described the EGM as a sort of a convincing result, which I think perhaps sort of raised some eyebrows. It, you know, only sort of looks convincing, I think, on the technicality of the way that the vote's structured. You know, I know Mark Ives has sort of spoken and saying how it's a concern in the first place that, you know, we're even having an EGM to get to this point. So there's issues, although, you know, the vote didn't go through, there's clearly a lot of discontent across the National League, and there's issues to be resolved. So I suppose, although for now this has gone away in a sense, you know, there's a lot of sort of work for the National League here to do, really, in terms of sort of regaining some trust from its unhappy clubs.
Yeah, I suppose it's the tale of our time, isn't it? You have votes and results and people still not being happy with them. I think it's one that people will be grumbling about for a long time, and you can understand why as well. Yeah, maybe it's it also says a lot about the differences between the clubs that are in the National League. And you know, previously in the olden days, you know, the conference that Step 1 was just a single division league, and maybe that's showing up now at this time, that there are different needs for different levels of that league at the moment.
Yeah, there is, and it's quite clear that the disparities between Step 1 and Step 2, Step 1's majority is full-time, Step 2 isn't, and as clubs that have come up from Step 3 may have been there sort of historically, whereas you've got clubs at the top level who've come down from the Football League and may not have been in non-league before. So you've got this sort of vast sort of array of clubs, really, sort of almost at both ends of the spectrum and of non-league in a way. So it's difficult for the National League to manage in that sense, because you're trying to cater for two groups, and it comes back to the elite and non-elite argument that's been discussed a lot over the past 12 months or so. So it's difficult quite to see really sort of how the National League resolve this. Obviously, there's been calls for an independent regulator and an independent structure, and obviously that's something that's being looked at the higher echelons of football. But yeah, it's certainly an issue for the National League, and I think when people have time away from football and matches aren't being played, these things come to light and people start asking questions. So yeah, it's certainly been a difficult period for the National League, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, as you mentioned, the number of clubs coming down that were full time to make pretty much the majority of clubs in the step one now are being full time. Maybe Sutton achieving what they achieved on that hybrid part-time basis, maybe that will change some of the clubs' minds. But I think that's probably a big differential between step one and step two, simply because of the resources that are available to them. But everybody's going to be excited by this weekend's final weekend in the league programme. It's a Stato dream, isn't it? We know Sutton United are promoted, Torquay United guaranteed second spot, but is it three down to 10 all to play for in the hunt for the other five playoff spots and all kicking off at 12:30 on Saturday?
Yeah, going to be a really interesting final day, as you say. As yeah, quite a few sort of permutations there as to who will finish in those playoff spots. Obviously, Notts County are nailed on in fifth place, and then sixth and seventh, where Wrexham and Chesterfield currently sit, are up for grabs. And then you've got Eastleigh, Bromley, Halifax, all following and trying to get in on the playoff party. You've got Wrexham at Dagenham, which won't be easy. Dagenham were making a late push for the playoffs themselves. Bromley are at home to Notts County, so that's a difficult one as well. And then Halifax are playing Chesterfield, so that's almost a bit of a shootout there, really, for a playoff place. And then Eastleigh at Solihull Hall. So yeah, it's going to be one of those afternoons where everyone's checking their phones and seeing scores come in and seeing what's happening elsewhere, really. So yeah, pretty uncomfortable and tense afternoon in store. But I'm sure me and you will certainly be looking forward to it, though, as neutrals.
Yeah, it's going to be quite an afternoon of sport when you've got the Championship playoff as well later on in the afternoon. And we know Andy Woodman, the manager at Bromley, will be desperate to get there to see his son play in that one for Swansea. So the big game on BT Sport is of course, as you mentioned, Dagenham and Redbridge against Wrexham. So, as you said, only the visitors now in the playoff hunt there. But that's going to be quite some game. Although, probably you could have chosen any one of the final fixtures. I think even Barnet Sutton United, it's one of those games that it's a weekend where you want to be at every single one of these games.
Yeah, it's one sort of for the multi-screen one, isn't it? I think, but no, yeah, like you say, I think BT could have chosen anyone, and it would have delivered. So, yeah, always sort of difficult to pick really when you have so much choice. But yeah, interesting to see which way it goes. It's, I'm finding it sort of difficult to call really which way who's going to end up where. So it's best just to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and wins so vital, as you say. Yeah, many of these clubs haven't booked their place in the playoffs yet. But also, the higher you finish, potentially the better route to the playoff final. And I think recent history suggests a better chance of going up as well.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think anyone that's finished outside of second and third place has not won in the playoff final. I think that's right, Tim. So yeah, clearly getting into those spots is pretty key, and Hartlepool still playing to get in there, where Stockport are currently third. And of course, Torquay have already secured second. So yeah, an interesting one there. Stockport playing Yeovil on the final day, and Hartlepool at home to Weymouth. So they're sort of on paper, they're playing pretty easy games in terms of the opposition, you know, don't have anything to play for and are in the bottom half of the table. So, you know, that will be perhaps one that where it's just a case of getting a professional job done and getting over the line. You know, you certainly don't want to be having to risk playing an extra game in the playoffs against a Chesterfield or a Bromley or someone like that.
Yeah, and interestingly, much discussion in the national media this week about Sutton having to replace their 3G pitch, but I guess Bromley potentially in the playoffs again too, in a similar position.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, yeah, I hadn't thought about that with Bromley. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a tight turnaround should they go all the way to the playoff final and win it and then all of a sudden have to get rid of their pitch. I was talking to Bruce earlier at Sutton, the Sutton chairman, who, you know, was saying that, you know, their deadlines are pretty tight in terms of getting the pitch put down and changed for next season. So if you're doing that in the playoffs, which is June 19th, is it, Tim?
Yeah, is 20th, right? I think. June 20th.
Yeah, June 20th. So yeah, you're probably looking at doing a ground fair then if you're Bromley. But I suppose they've got to get there first.
yeah, that's the important bit. So plenty to be reported on this weekend. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, so all the National League final day action will be covered. I've got a column from Tony Incenzo, non-league groundhopper and a well-known name for many. We've got a nice piece with Brian Stock at Weymouth about the job he's been doing there in his first season as manager. Obviously, Weymouth's still in the division for another year. Of course, there's no relegation, but, you know, they're sort of clear of that and have been really sort of trying to push on and keep going in these final few months when they haven't had anything to play for. I've spoken to Matt Gray and Bruce Elliott at Sutton, manager and chairman, on their success, obviously winning the National League title, and also winger David Adjaboy about how the role he's played, obviously coming up from Worthing at step three to be one of the real sort of star names in that Sutton team, and certainly been raising eyebrows. We'll also have the reaction from finals day and the two winners, Hornchurch and Warrington. Bobby Wilkinson's been signing a few players at Bracknell. Dave Tarfey, of course, the former Maidenhead striker who was at Woking most recently. So, yeah, they've sort of got big plans, I'm sure, to push on into step three this year if the season can get finished. But yeah, loads in there again this week, and yeah, plenty to read throughout Sunday morning and beyond.
And it's a half term as well that people with kids will be, I'm sure, looking forward to with big smiles on their faces. So make sure that you enjoy Sunday with your non-league paper and a coffee. I love seeing the social media tweets and various posts of people enjoying their non-league paper on a Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. We like those. Send those in.
David, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us once again on the show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
So to our next guest, and a man, well, if Hollywood were to do that non-league biopic I'm always talking about, it would certainly be on my shortlist. It's like one of those football big books you read as a kid. Obsessed with football at his hometown club, he works his way up the coaching system at Oldham Athletic, earning the right to some decent spells as caretaker manager at the club before taking the vacant role at Halifax Town in the FC Halifax Town in the National League. Two seasons on, and they could be making it back-to-back playoff appearances under his stewardship if results go their way this weekend. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at FC Halifax Town, Pete Wild.
Hi, mate. You okay?
I'm good, Pete. Now, let's start with Saturday. Yeah? You win, you move to 68 points. That could be enough to lift you from 10th to 6th and leapfrog your visitors, Chesterfield, and then hope results at Wrexham, Eastleigh, Bromley go your way. I'm guessing you would have taken that at the start of the season.
I think we all would. I think it was a transitional period in the summer for us, more than we thought, in terms of the 13 players that left the club. And we had to start again. So to build a squad,
a team that didn't really start well as he was still trying to gel and have got better as the season goes on. I think I keep saying this, little old Halifax, to be punching amongst all them teams that are in that top 10. I think we will be the lowest of the budgets, certainly by a mile.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that you started poorly, to be fair. Well, one win in nine, I think it was. But it was good to see that the chairman kept faith with you, and you've more than proved him right since. It must be a great relationship you have, first and foremost, but it also must be great because that probably eases some of the weight off your shoulders as well when so many chairmen are trigger happy nowadays when things start going sour.
Well, yeah, I think if we hadn't been playing well, it may be that comment or that argument might have had some legs, but we were playing really well. We just weren't seeing teams off, so I never felt like there was a problem. Every team, at every level, across the season, has a sticky spell, and we just happened to have ours at the start of the season. So it frustrates me in football when fans, clubs start wanting it to change after maybe 5-6 games. It's just ridiculous. Everybody has their up and down periods, and it's important during them periods that you remain focused on what you do, and that relationship never, there was never a conversation where anyone, both sides, thought, oh my God, we're panicking here. So we have got a really good relationship. We know, I completely understand the constraints I'm working under. And hopefully the chairman understands that I'm getting every penny's worth out of them constraints that we're under.
Yeah, and I believe he's given you a renewed contract as well, so he obviously it feels that way. But it's good to hear, because it's a drum that we're constantly beating here, because it doesn't matter what business you're in, you need to get to know the people you're working with.
Yeah, and you can do all your due diligence you want. I think we did excellent due diligence on our players that we brought in. But again, we the constraints are that we can only have a 5-week pre-season. So you basically got 5 weeks to make them dance. Then you've got one of the problems we had at the start of the season was our two main strikers we recruited were then injured the week before the season. So we then had to go and recruit strikers who hadn't worked with us all pre-season to try and fill the void. They did as well as they could. But we still weren't working with the group that we brought in. So you've got all these things to think about, and people will see what they want to see. They'll see the bits they want to see, and they'll ignore the bits that suit them, that don't suit them. You look at Manchester United last night, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has this messiah at 5-8. At half 10, he's the worst manager they've ever had. So we've all got to take things in context, and as long as people do that, then I think you'll get more longevity in managers.
I love your Manchester United analogy there. That the fact that De Gea is no good at penalties, I don't think anybody thought he'd be taking one.
Well, exactly. And again, we all build our own narrative to suit our arguments. We all do that in society, regardless of football or not. But if there's a narrative to be built, most football fans, I think, sometimes think it's better when they lose because they can be proved right, and they're all quiet when they're winning because they're proved wrong. And I think that happens in football a lot. But I certainly believe that in looking at my own club, that if you can get the fans on board and you can get them hearing the same messages and you're passing the same messages that go out from the club, then you can certainly drag most of them along and get them on your side.
And talking about people seeing their own narrative in games, I loved your interview last month with David Richardson in the non-league paper when you revealed that you're one of the many managers who prefer to watch at least the first half from the stand rather than the dugouts just because of the view. And it amazes me that not every manager does that, because you see such a different game, and that's often why fans see a different game from the manager.
Yeah, and I think it takes the emotion out of it for you, because you're up there actually analysing the game, and all you're trying to do is be the best person you can for the job. So if the best person you can for the job means you have to sit in the stands for the first half, then so be it. But we're all obsessed, certainly in this country, with the manager should be on the touchline, he should be shouting and bawling from the start. But in coaching and in managing, if you shout and bawl for 90 minutes, if you commentate and narrate for 90 minutes, you're going to ask the players how much they hear, because it's just a constant drone from the sidelines. If you are dropping in 2-3 times a game information that can really help them, then I think the players take more interest in that than you just commentating and they just hear a drone in the background. So I think sitting in the stands, getting a feel for how the opposition are playing. If you need to nip down and speak to your assistant, we all have modern technology. We all have microphones that I can speak to my assistant from the touchline if I need to. It makes me a better manager at half-time. I have an opportunity to change things at half-time, it makes me a more rounded person.
And Saturday is the first game back at the Shea with fans in, 14 months? And it's this game? I mean, again, if Hollywood was writing it...
Yeah. Well, again, we came in and for want of a better phrase, the club was in a transitional period when we came in, and they weren't really pushing at the right end of the table. We've delivered two guaranteed top 10 finishes, one playoffs, and hopefully a fight to go with the playoffs. We've had to sort of trim the budget this year due to taking out a loan from the club. So with a game to go, with a trim budget, we're 1 point off the playoffs. I'm sure that fans hopefully see that we've tried to give everything this season, and having them back on Saturday is fantastic, and hopefully we can deliver two successful seasons for them.
And when you're up against a side as well that are in that playoff run with you, what an occasion to for the game only to allow home fans in. You dealt with that last week at Maidenhead. How tough was that?
Well, it is tough, and then I'll be honest, I felt a little bit claustrophobic for the first hour, half an hour on the Saturday, because you're not used to actually having people around you. You know, when people, you know, we're the ground to ourselves. So it was interesting. Maidenhead fans certainly got behind the team, and we had to weather that. But I actually think we're better when the chips are down, and when we're chasing, and when people route us off, and we've been wrote off so many times this year, and the squad have responded every time they've been wrote off. And again, I have no doubt that they'll go and do everything they can to prove people wrong on Saturday again.
Yeah, you've got some decent experience in your team as well. Do you think that's the key to you getting better as the season's worn on?
Yeah, that was something that we targeted in the last summer, was to get a real structure to the club. So the young, hungry players who come through, or maybe they've had the adversity of getting released from a Premier League under-23s or a Football League under-23s. We then have the middle one where we've got the National League, experienced National League players or young National League players who are on the rise and understand the rigours of a National League season. And then we have the experienced boys who either... We wanted them to behave in a way that people looked up to, or behave in a way where they could help the younger players and push them. There was a real, we had a real push to try and get that structure in the club. And like you say, I think that's really helped us with some of the experienced boys that we've got there, of manage the dressing room, help the players when it's when they've needed help, and demanded more when the standards haven't been great. And I think we've really got that right this year.
And I think it's proven that how important it is. And I know you and your assistant, Chris Millington, like most managers, you keep a list of players and their attributes, and sort of a database going. And journalists like myself have been in this game for far too long. We keep similar notes on chairman, on press officers, on managers, sad as it may seem. And one of the notes I have alongside your name is that you took charge at Halifax on the 24th of July 2019, which is the same day that Boris Johnson became Prime Minister. So it's been a rocky ride at both times for you in trouble times, but how do you think you fared compared to the PM?
Well, that's an interesting one. I never knew that, but how do I say? I think we've both had similar stresses. Probably is there a little bit more worrying than mine, but like I say, you're in the public domain. When you're in the public domain, you're there to be shot. Everybody's got an opinion about you, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, and all you can do is do things to the best of your ability. When you go home at night and go, did I get that right? Yes. Did I get that right? No. What am I going to do about it? And that's all you can do. Just self-reflect on yourself. Make sure you give the best account of yourself as you can. And what will be, will be. I wanted to come to Halifax because I wanted to see if I can, to see if do it. Being left alone. I've certainly been left to try and mould a team in the way I wanted to be done. And people can make their own judgment whether that's been successful or it hasn't.
Yeah, and I certainly sense from you. I mean, I mentioned Oldham Athletic before. You lived and breathed Oldham, really, didn't you, for years? And I sense the same's come true now at FC Halifax.
Well, yeah, well, I think it's really important is that you get the club you're working for and you get the town. And like I say, I was at Oldham for nearly 15 years and I live in Oldham, I still live in Oldham. But I see Halifax as a similar town to Oldham and the people having similar core values as people from Oldham. So you have to embrace that and you have to get that and you've got to build a team that reflects the culture of the town. And hopefully we've done that and hopefully we've embraced everything that is Halifax and the people, et cetera, et cetera, and try to galvanise. And when we came in, it was the club versus the fans, and that's only going to end one way. So we try and get people back on our side and try and get them as one and want them to feel as one. Don't get me wrong, there's been ups and downs and I've had my moans at times when I feel like that they've been unfair to us and they've had their moans back. But that's just a healthy relationship. If it was all rosy in the garden, we'd be all at Man City and swimming away with Premier Leagues.
I love that you're practical, down to earth, and the fact that emotions are important as well. But the modern game's all about stats. I mean, I was looking at win ratios the other day, and as it happens, your name was on the list. And it seems that with win ratios, you're on a par with people like Brian Clough and Roy Hodgson, and in fact, far better than that of Neil Warnock and Harry Redknapp. So, I mean, you're a young manager with plenty of ambition. Can FC Halifax match that?
Of course they can. I mean, nothing would give me greater pleasure than getting this club back in the league and ending all them years of hurt for this football club. But the practicalities are that we've got other clubs around us throwing a significant amount of money at with bottomless pits to try and do exactly what we want to do. But we've got to work in a different way to them. But we're certainly as ambitious as we can be to try and push them on as much as we can. With stats like that, I don't know if you want to change your career and start being the agent. That would be fantastic. but like I say, it's not just me. Like you see, you mentioned Chris there and all the backroom staff who work so hard every day. But again, you can have a plan. We certainly have a very definitive plan. But unless the players go out and deliver that, unless we have that relationship and that rapport with the players, it's nothing. So the players deserve as much credit as any staff member does. And if everybody does the job, I basically paint the roof. And I'd like to think that because we've got such a good structure in place that it allows me to take that step back and paint the roof when needed.
Yeah, while I'm acting as your agent, on the fact that resource-wise, compared to some of the others that you're up there against, you're not really even at the same party, are you? But there is yourself and Chris and a smaller backroom staff than other people. So you're a very busy man. It's Thursday afternoon. You're doing an interview with me. I know you've got other interviews lined up. You've still got a match to play on Saturday. You have to be fully committed to be a manager in the National League.
Definitely. And I understand why the birth of the head coach is coming, because it allows you just to coach and you don't have the recruitment side, the agent side, this, that and the other side. I really get the head coach role now. I understand it, and it's probably good for football. But like you say, at the National League level, you are head of recruitment, you are head of tactics, you are head of admin, you're head of HR. You're making sure that the academy is running the way it should do. Like you say, you're doing the media, your media commitments, but I kind of like that. I'm coming from Oldham, it's all I've ever known is that everybody mocks in, you do more than your job role. But again, isn't that like the sort of culture of the town? The culture of Halifax is that it's a working class town, that you've got to work hard for your money, and hopefully the staff at the club and the players at the club portray that model. And if I'm portraying that from the top, hopefully then other people will see that and they'll do more. And we used the strap line of go the extra mile at the start of the season, and it was everywhere, and it was what I wanted to be. And I could say to a man, staff, players, everybody has certainly gone the extra mile this year to get us back in the hunt for the playoffs again.
Yeah, it may be the culture of the town, the culture of your club, but it's also the culture of non-league, and that's why we love stories like yours. Now, Saturday's going to be all about the 12:30 p.m. kickoffs right across the division. You've got fans in the ground now, so I doubt you'll be able to avoid updates from the fans, but will it just be about playing your game and then finding out at the end for sure?
Well, yeah, like I say, it's quite clear-cut for us. We've got to win. So unless we win, it's irrelevant what's going on elsewhere. So it's really easy for me to sort of focus the boys in on got to win first, lads, and then come quarter to three, we can decide whether the results have gone our way or not. So it's not like if we draw or they get beat, blah, blah, blah. Just as far as we've got to win. So I think it's quite clear for us. And actually, I think we're in a better place because of that, that we know we've just got to go out there and take care of our own business.
Well, I suppose I better let you go off and do some of that business as well. Pete, it's been fantastic talking to you. Any agency inquiries, of course, come via the Non-League Football Show. But it's been great to get you on. Best of luck at the weekend and hopefully speak to you again very soon.
Thank you very much, mate.
That's it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests and for everybody to listening, wherever you may be. It's the summer. The sun shines out. Hopefully, we can all be enjoying some football in the sunshine very, very soon. You can, of course, keep up with everything going on this season and throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. I'm there at Tim Fuller. The National League denouement will be covered, of course, by BT Sport on Saturday, and you can catch up with all the reports and that, and the previews for the playoffs as well, which we'll be talking about next week in the Non-League paper this weekend. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.